welcome to episode 55 of the Plantriotic Podcast with Chris Kendall. What is up, my plantriotic, plant-loving, and plant-interested friends out there? How is it going? I'm doing very well here in Colorado Springs with my girlfriend Izzy. We're having a wonderful time. Just did a really brutal hike yesterday, so my legs are pretty sore. But other than that, I'm a happy man. Thank you for tuning in to the Plantriotic Podcast, my show, my platform of service, where I provide all of you guys, you truth seekers, health seekers, compassion seekers, with a 1 to 2 hour conversation once a week, every single Monday, with someone that I come across in my life who's an inspiration, someone that motivates me to be a better person, someone that educates me on something that I really didn't know too much about, but I know could help me live a life with more compassion, sustainability, health, and happiness. Definitely, ultimately happiness in the end, which is what a lot of today's episode is about. So that's pretty much what the podcast is. I am a college student. I'm a vegan activist. I'm a yoga teacher, plant-powered muscle builder. I'm an artist. I'm a potter. I'm a photographer, an Instagrammer, a YouTube, a social media, I don't know what you could call it, social media maven. I'm pretty crazy on social media these days. And the message of what I really promote and try to get out is that, you know, figuring ways to live just in the best, most beautiful expression of who you are, the most sustainable, the most loving, compassionate, and healthy. And hopefully learning from experts in that field who have life experience, like today's guest, Chris Kendall, to learn from their life experiences so that we can expedite our process just to that enlightened, blissful state that we're all trying to strive for. So before we get into today's episode with Chris, I'm going to keep this intro really short, by the way. I listen to a lot of podcasts. I understand you want to get right into the interview, so I'm going to keep this short and sweet and simple, I promise. If you want to support the podcast, if you like what I'm doing, if you like this episode, the best thing you can do is spread the word. Tell your friends, families, teachers, uncles, people walking down the street that you're listening to this really awesome podcast and that, you know, just encouraging other people to listen to it if you think they'd enjoy it. And what you can also do if you want to just double support is leave a review on the iTunes page for the podcast. It takes no time at all. You can take anywhere from like 2 minutes to 20 minutes to write a ballad about me if you want in the show. But just to show, you know, just to allow other people who are searching for iTunes shows, just to give your opinion on how you like it, what it's helped you, that would be a huge help. It helps get the ratings go up. So all you need to do is go on to iTunes, type in the Plantriotic Podcast, leave a review and a rating, and that would be really awesome. You can also follow me on all my various social media platforms. The podcast is only once a week, right? And it's an interview style. You don't really hear much about what I have to say as much as the guests. So if you want to follow me daily, you can follow me on Instagram, Snapchat, Twitter, and I'm putting up 3 vlogs on YouTube a month. A week. Every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, there's a new episode. So make sure to follow me over there, write some comments, send me some love, and that will be really fun. It's a cool way to interact with you all. All right, on to this episode. We're going to get right into the conversation, but first, let me tell you a little bit about Chris because he is super inspiring. He does a lot of cool stuff. He runs the website and the Instagram account and this whole brand called The Raw Advantage. His story is, and we go into his story a lot in this conversation. He was a kid growing up in Canada in the kind of, you know, punk rock and skateboarding scene. He found out that he really suffered with depression in a really serious way, you know, to a debilitating point. And within that whole culture, he was staying up late, not treating his body properly, indulging a little bit in, you know, substances and, you know, unhealthy food. And it just got, it brought him to a rock bottom that he did not know how to climb out of. And raw foods saved his life, quite literally. He's been a 100% fruit-based, low-fat raw foodist, I'm pretty sure for over a decade. I don't quite remember because we recorded this conversation at the 2015 Woodstock Fruit Festival a few months ago, which is an event that he is a pioneer at. He does tons of lectures, cooking demos with his beautiful, amazing girlfriend, Miss Naturally Ashley on Instagram. She has a beautiful, famous Instagram account, and I have Thrive Magazine in my apartment, in my house right now, which she was featured in, which is super cool. So there's kind of this ultimate raw food fruitarian duo that makes all this amazing content. So this conversation is really about healing yourself mentally with raw foods, healing yourself physically with raw foods. He also has gone through some, you know, injuries with skateboarding, and he is a Kundalini yoga teacher, really into yoga and physical rehabilitation. He also sort of formed his own version of yoga called Kundalini yoga. I took a couple classes at the Woodstock Fruit Festival. He's absolutely amazing. He's just a bright light of energy and happiness and love. And he is a really good skateboarder, which is something that I was interested in when I was young as well. Still interested in it, just don't do it as much. Okay, he also has a YouTube channel with tons of interviews and information and cooking recipes. He has an app, the Raw Advantage app, which you can get for free on iTunes. There's tons of raw recipes from, you know, smoothies to soups, and tons of stuff like that. He also has ebooks. He does retreats. You can find all this stuff on therawadvantage.com. But this is such a cool concept. He's hosting a retreat in Costa Rica, January 18th to 25th of 2016. It's a skateboarding, yoga, rehabilitation, raw food retreat. Nothing sounds better to me than that. So if you're interested in stuff like that, you can go to therawadvantage.com/retreats. He also has another one called Raw Food and Yoga, which is March 12th to 19th of 2016. So pretty much this guy offers so much stuff. Go to his website. He has so much to offer, from free content on YouTube and recipes to ebooks all the way to retreats. Let's get into the frickin' rawsome world of Chris Kendall. Morning, Chris.
Good morning.
What is the typical, maybe not specifically at the Woodstock Fruit Festival because there's so much going on, but what is the typical Chris Kendall morning ritual, if there is one?
Wow, morning ritual.
Whether that's like with food or meditation or singing or anything.
You know, I'll be honest, I'm a pretty lazy cat. I'm a Leo, and I like to just wake up, stretch out in my bed, relax, and usually I either go quickly check my computer and see what's on there or take a hot shower. After that, I'm back on my computer, and it's a standing desk, so I'm kind of stretching and moving around while I check my emails and figure out what I'm going to do for the day.
What propelled you to get a standing desk?
Well, I've had lower back pain for a long time. I fractured my back about 7.5 years ago.
Skateboarding?
Skateboarding, yes. So I've had ups and downs with it, and when it's kind of been on the down, I've decided to always use my standing desk and sometimes sleep on hard surfaces without a bed, all those kinds of things. I've tried almost everything for my back, and a standing desk really makes a difference. Plus, I find I'm way more productive with a standing desk as well. So 90% of the time, my desk is up in the air standing, and otherwise, it's low to the ground, so I can sit cross-legged.
Cool. Yeah, my experience with that, I've been dabbling with it because I'm a college student and also do podcasting, YouTube, whatever. So my life is a lot of the times on a computer. And currently in Colorado, where I live, my standing desk setup is a banana box on my desk, yep. Which actually works really perfectly. I think one day I'll upgrade to a legit, more legit standing desk. But I've listened to other podcasts, actually, about like standing connected to longevity, like in terms of,
for sure.
I mean, we definitely just sit like most animals never would for that extended period of time.
I think I like the banana box better than a legit one. You know, right now here at the Woodstock Fruit Festival, I have a t-shirt box, a papaya box, and a hat box on top of a low desk. Uh-huh. You know, and I've used the banana box too, and I've read lots of studies on it as well. It definitely seems like a good idea, and it makes a lot of anatomical sense to do so.
How many years have you been to Woodstock?
Since the beginning, I believe this is probably my fifth year
time.
Then, and there was also the Woodstock Fruit Festival Hawaii, so the sixth festival, right since the beginning, and I was blessed in the beginning to be invited on as the head chef, and ever since then I've been doing head chef work. Last 2 years I stopped doing that. For Woodstock,
right.
Yes. And that first year it was like head chef, yoga teacher, which I'd never actually taught at a festival before.
Wow.
Which was really cool. And I also did lectures, which were my first big lectures, and did some food demos and chefing. So yeah,
that sounds like a busy first Woodstock schedule.
I tell you, man, the first 3 years.
Especially for a lazy person.
Yeah, for a lazy. You know, the thing is that I'm kind of the on or off kind of person, where it's like I've really mastered the art of leisure, you know, when it's like, when it's time to be leisureful, when I don't feel like doing it, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to lay around and be as lazy or as healing to myself, give myself that time space as I can. But if I'm on go, I can be the dude like up at 7 going until 3 in the morning and do that for a week straight. You know, wear myself thin, but I can make it work really well.
So, sort of a man of extremes in a certain way, would you say?
Yes, I would say that that has been my predisposition or maybe my inclination due to kind of my perception of life. And I've kind of learned to find a little bit more middle ground and to honor myself and my capacity to do that a little more. Mm-hmm. But yeah, those first few years, man, the first three actually, I was like, you know, up early and down late. I'd say it was maybe me and a couple other people here working that much and that long.
Yeah.
But I think I had the most varied tasks, which I loved, man. It was, you know, there's benefits from it and there's some drawbacks, you know, from the energy I'm using, but it's definitely a blessing to be a part in that way and share so many different ways to do it.
Awesome. Well, I want to, like, before we get into the good stuff and like talk yoga and like what you're about now and what you're doing, I want to take it back because honestly, I don't know your full story.
Yeah.
Kind of your vegan journey, your raw food journey, your also yoga journey. We are both, you know, I'm not 100% raw. I've been raw for 9 months at a time. I know the lifestyle. I appreciate it and prefer it. But as both, you know, high raw yoga teacher, tatted dudes, I think we're going to have a lot to jive off of.
Absolutely.
So however far you really want to go back of when just this, you know, spark of alternative lifestyle started to happen and how it progressed.
Awesome. Cool. No, for sure. Well, you know, I'll start back by saying when I was about 13 or 14, I started really getting interested in self-help, spirituality, maybe even a little younger, maybe 12 or 11. I remember I had like a picture Bible. I started reading that, started reading the King James Version, you know, started reading the Bhagavad Gita and stuff like that, and a lot of different kind of philosophical, religious kind of texts and stuff like that. And always had a big interest in just different lines of thought. And when I got a little older, though, by the time I was like 16, 17, my main concern was just to get out of my hometown, skateboard.
Where in Canada are you from?
I'm from Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. It's in Canada. It's in the central part of Canada. I always call it the heart of Canada because it's just off to the left, just a little bit.
So like north of North Dakota?
I don't even know.
Okay. That's how I gauge Canadian, because it's, you know, it's just borders the north of the U.S. That's not how I always gauge it. I've been to like Toronto. I've also been to Squamish recently.
Beautiful there. Love it, Squamish.
Very cool. All right,
Toronto's
so,
nice too.
So you were kind of out in the countryside of...
Yeah, prairies. They say you can watch your dog run away for 3 days because it's so flat. And it's true. Really hot in the summer, really cold in the winter. But there's the middle ground sometimes too. So it's awesome there. But I mean, I grew up as a skateboarder since age 5, always skateboarding.
Interested. What was the skating culture? Like, I grew up skateboarding as well.
Yeah.
Also rollerblading, but I grew up in LA, so there's kind of like a culture of that. I would skate UCLA every single weekend with
amazing.
Friends after school.
I was dreaming of your life at that time, you know, very honestly, you know, I mean, when I was really young, it was like there's the skater haters and people yell like, stupid skaters, fuck you, and like just freak out at you when you're just skating, throw eggs at you, not all the time, but it happened a lot when I was little, and then it kind of went into the punk and into the really big baggy clothes and pants and all that
stage.
Were you
into punk rock?
I was definitely into punk rock. I went to some cool concerts and gigs and stuff and got in the mosh pit a lot, you know.
Cool, because like something also this podcast has explored with a lot of guests is the connection between veganism and punk rock, which is very strong.
Huge, yeah, for sure. Very political, very just kind of individual and
do it yourself.
That anger a little bit in there, which is often in the vegan movement. Not always, of course, but a lot of time in the beginning or in a few passionate people in that kind of that wavelength. But yeah, skateboarding has been always a huge part of my life, and that's kind of when I was like 15, 16, 17. I really was just like, all I want to do in my life is skateboard. I wasn't really thinking like, I want to be a pro necessarily. Mm-hmm. That wasn't the end game, but it was like, all I want to do is skate. I just want to skate, skate, skate. And by the time I was 17, I moved out to Vancouver. Mm-hmm. By the time I was 18, I moved to Edmonton, Alberta. Some good friends were there, and also you could drink at age 18 there, whereas 19 everywhere else. And so, you know, long story short, 17, 18, I was drinking a lot. I started smoking weed. I started full-time smoking cigarettes, which I had started in grade 4, actually, but got way more into it at that time. fast food and, you know, dollar store food was my norm, and I was feeling crap. You know, when I was like 19, I started to feel suicidal. I was really depressed. There was many nights I'd go to bed and just be like, please don't wake up. Please don't wake up. I was really, really negative in my head. Mm-hmm. But to anyone around me, they thought I was the most positive cat in the world because I still had the smile. I still had the persona in public with people.
You become a really great actor.
I did, yeah, because I was like, and it's not to say that all day, every day I was depressed and suicidal. There were still many, many points in the moment where I was in the moment in loving life. But it was when I was slowed down by myself, all of a sudden these patterns and these thought kind of records would come in play. And most of the time they're self-depressive, you know, and they're like negative and just like everything's too much, you know. So that became a big part of my life, and I knew I needed to do something different. Right. You know, that's when I was like, this isn't working. I started partying because I loved it and I was having fun. Now I'm partying to get away from everything. Now I'm partying because I'm depressed. Now I'm partying because my normal state isn't what I want anymore.
Right.
And my skateboarding is going downhill. My joints were hurting. Candida was really intense. I had jock itch where I just wanted to scratch myself raw, you know, and no good, right? And so actually what I found was yoga. And so that was now, I don't even know, my math isn't great. I think 16, 17 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
My first real introduction to yoga was at Rodney Yee Intermediate
nice.
Power
the,
Yoga.
He's like a video master of the
yes.
yoga world.
Yeah, he's great,
I
man.
I love Rodney Yee.
He's great, man. I got this Intermediate Power Yoga class and I was just going for it. I was like, doing it religiously every day, and I found a new passion. It really helped with my focus. It helped with more positivity. It helped my body stretch out and become more flexible again because I'd become even more lazy since I was hurt more and eating crappy food all the time.
Did someone recommend that you find a yoga class, or was it something that you innately suck at, like, you know, tried to find yourself?
You know what? I think honestly, and I can't say 100%
right.
for sure, but I'm pretty darn sure I was just like in a store, like a department store, and just saw like the bulk bin kind of yoga tapes. And
cheap tapes.
Yeah, that yoga wasn't nearly as big back then. You know, there was barely...
Like the trendiness of it, especially, I mean, I don't know about in Canada.
It's all over. It's all, for sure, you know? And, you know, I didn't see any studios. I don't even know if there was many studios back then, but the tape was there. And it was more accessible, and I loved that. I've always kind of been a lone wolf, solitary kind of figure. I've always loved being in groups, but also I need that, like, alone time to thrive, right? So that was my alone time. I started doing it every single day. I found a lot of benefit, and that opened my eyes to the impact that diet has on your life. And, of course, to some degree, I knew that. You know, I was like, I used to eat anything and everything. I was kind of the T-Rex that would make fun of vegetarians. My sister was vegetarian. I was like, it's like, eating meat, just come on, you want it, you want it. You know, just making fun of her. Just a little jackass, you know. But I didn't really understand how much of an impact that food had on your diet or on your lifestyle and on your health and fitness. So when I started looking more into the philosophical side of yoga, which I generally am, like, I'll start on the tip of the iceberg and then try and explore down. And that's what happened with yoga. And it really opened my eyes. And I was just like, wow, there's so much more to yoga than just these movements.
The asanas, the physical. Yeah, that's my experience as well. Like, I got into yoga in Los Angeles because after riding my bicycle across the U.S., my mom said, you literally can't bend over, your hamstrings are so tight, you're coming to yoga class with me. And I thought I was just going to, like, what all the L.A. moms did. And I was like, this is so lame. And initially, I saw guys doing handstands with these ripped bodies. And I was like, that's pretty cool. I could get into this. And started practicing. And it was purely through the introduction of the asanas and the physical postures for probably the first 6 months.
Yeah.
And then luckily, I went to the right class at the right time where that kind of bigger picture yoga bomb was just dropped on me. And since then, I can say that the physical postures are cool. And I practice them and I teach them. But it is definitely not as big of a part of my yoga journey and continuing my education as what yoga really means to me.
Absolutely. Personally. I vibe there for sure. Definitely. It's it's a full lifestyle.
Sorry,
you know?
To cut you off. In your
no,
story.
No, of course. This is a conversation.
Yeah.
So, yeah, from there, you know,
You were figuring out that nutrition.
Yeah, and I really was like, you know, this yoga is helping a lot, but I really feel like there's more to it. And I went home for a little vacation from Edmonton, And I decided I want to go to a bookstore and find something. And I need something specifically on nutrition because yoga was pointing towards vegetarianism. And I was like, that makes sense. I'm not really fully ready for it because it's more a philosophical point of view that talked about the impact, you know, but it wasn't quite as airtight as I needed for my mind to switch, you know. So I went to this bookstore and literally as like a used bookstore, tons and tons of books. I was looking around and one book just hit me in the head. It was one of those moments where it's just like, there's no other book in the store but this one. It was glowing as the Holy Grail. Like, grabbed it, looked at it. It said, Fit for Life. And this book forever changed my life because I literally like came home, I read it. The main precepts, if no one's heard of Fit for Life, I don't know where you've been because it's the most sold, most read book on nutrition in the world, most translated, like 37 different languages and like billions of copies sold. Right. You'll find it in every used bookstore. But its basic precepts were like food combining, you know, eat fruit first on an empty stomach for breakfast, go vegetarian or vegan, all about raw food. It kind of gears a little bit more low fat, but it's not specifically, it's just less processed, more whole foods.
Right.
And, you know, that it's a lifestyle. It goes into holistics and goes into exercise and all those things. And this just all of a sudden was like, wow, like, oh my, I can't believe how much of an impact this is going to make in my life. And I just started taking it on, you know, like I can actually say that was, you know, that was, around 15 years ago now, 15 and a half, 16 years ago too. And since then, I've probably had about 5 or 6 cooked breakfasts, literally.
Wow.
I just made raw for breakfast my go. And if I didn't have raw for breakfast, I skipped until lunch. You know, I started food combining. I would call myself a food combining geek because sometimes looking at recipes that aren't well food combined will give me a bellyache. Literally.
You just geeked out and got into it so hard.
So much. I read every book on the subject. I got into the digestion, the chemistry, and everything. And I just started food combining 99% of the time. Not as a rule, but as a tool for better digestion. And I'll bend it. I'll be flexible. I'll even now, I'll go completely contrary. But I feel so much better food combining. That's just become a total part of my life. And something that when people say, oh, it doesn't work, or the science isn't there, I'm like, sometimes that doesn't matter. It's like application.
How do you feel?
Do it for 2 months and then go back, you know?
Yeah, I've felt it firsthand in a huge way. Even like a gas issue before I went raw, you know, before I started to try out raw and things like that, combining like cooked foods and fruit and raw foods, that's beyond, I think, any like raw food combining. And like, it can be really hard on your life, honestly, with just like gas and indigestion and stuff like that.
The more aware, the more you have it as a point of focus, the more you notice it as well, and the more it affects you too. So that was the one thing that actually I found a little bit hard when I did a little bit of high raw, was sometimes that balance, you know. That's another thing we can talk about later. But you know, that book just immediately just opened up a complete new passion. All of a sudden, nutrition and holism and holistic living was a huge passion. I started reading anything and everything I could on the subject.
And did you start like adopting a vegan diet right away?
No, I can't say I did, you know, but I did get pretty steadily into vegetarianism. And mostly, I'll admit, most of this stuff was, although the philosophical background definitely hit home, I was still self-absorbed to the extent that it was like mostly just about skateboarding, about athletics. And those things did matter, but not enough to be like, that's my main reason and I'm never doing that again.
Sure.
So it was a slow progression from like total fast food, carnivore-ish kind of behavior to more and more vegetarian, more reasons for being vegetarian and going in the direction of veganism.
And how was the skateboarding community hip to that? Like, what were your, you know, friends saying, from like the crazy party, you know, drinking guy to like reading books on nutrition and doing yoga? Like, because in my experience, I had to deal with that transition around 19 when I started to get spiritual and get into food. And like, you know, my friends were like, what's going on? You were like the life of the party in high school. What's happening? And I think that can be hard for a lot of people because they create a persona amongst their social group, and we're social creatures. And then when you flip that 180 degrees, it affects a lot of different people.
For sure. You know, and I'll be honest, I've been a bit of a chameleon all my life in that I can really settle into any situation or with different groups of people and feel pretty at home, still be myself to the largest degree, of course, not like put on a complete fake persona, but still be comfortable in myself and, you know, act accordingly or jive accordingly, where it never has been a huge deal. I'm definitely not a raw foodist or a vegan who's lost any friends. You know, a lot of people I know say they've lost a lot of friends, or it's like changed their social life a lot. For me, it hasn't a ton. I just do things a little less with certain people, you know, and do different things a lot more with certain people. But specifically here, you know, I still at that time drank, you know, I still partied and stuff. What I drank and how I ate afterwards changed. Like, I really quickly found out that I didn't want, like, sugary pop. I actually gave up pop in pop or soda, whatever, wherever you're from, in, you know, high school times. But I started going towards more, like, you know, fruit juice or tomato juice or water with vodka or Jägermeister and otherwise beer. So I was just, like, more conscious of what I was drinking.
A little bit cleaner.
A little cleaner. Squirt a lime in my, you know, my vodka press or my Clamato, which was, you know, probably one of the last kind of things I gave up drinking-wise that wasn't vegan. And otherwise, for breakfast, like, I found that when I'd eat juicy pears for breakfast or just a lot of fruit for breakfast after a night of drinking, I'd immediately, it was like my power meter in my Mario kind of thing just went, and I just felt better automatically. So it was like, wow, I feel even better after drinking, you know? So I did slow down a bit, and, you know, the one guy I lived with, Glenn, he was awesome, and he had actually gone vegetarian around the same time or briefly before or after. You know, I'll be honest, it's long enough ago, and at that time smoking enough ganja that some of the details are a little fuzzy, but I know he was super accepting of it. All my friends, you know, in my peer group, I was always, you know, like, everyone was all equal footing, but at the same time, nobody, I felt very unquestioned, you know. It was like, held in high esteem. I held all my friends in high esteem. I was held in high esteem, and whatever I did, people were like, cool, you know, that's awesome, man, good for you, you know. So I always had a lot of support from my peer group, my friends and my family. My sister had got vegetarian years before, so they knew the drill. They were all cool with it. So it didn't really shake my social life very much in that beginning time, for sure.
When does like Kundalini start to come into the
picture? That's fun, man. That's fun. So
or did we skip too much of a...
Well, we skipped a bunch of years, but, you know, they aren't as noteworthy in this discussion.
Okay.
You know, like,
cool.
Truthfully, you know, there was about 3 years where I progressively just ate cleaner and cleaner, where drinking and we're eating the occasional pizza or something like that became, like, very obscure, you know? Yoga, I was really mostly practicing hatha. I would say that I have been, by large, a lazy yogi, where, like, I'll have months of, like, you know, practice every single day consistent for hour at a time, and then I'll have months and years where it's like a cat, when I get up or when I sit down or when I feel something, I'll just, like, do a couple movements, a couple postures, and get into it for anywhere from 2 to 10 minutes, you know. So intuitive yoga, I'd say. And this kind of led me into moving to Vancouver, working at a health food store called Capers, which was Whole Foods' sister at the time, and working as a grocery store clerk there, you know. I was doing yoga a lot, skateboarding a ton, high raw vegan at that, or just getting into vegan, high raw vegan. And at that time, I was living in Vancouver. I had actually a little extra kind of thing on the side. I had lived with two yoga teachers who were, their breadth of knowledge were like so deep, you know, Georgina and Waylon, or Agni actually is her name now. Two beautiful, beautiful souls. There's a total other story there, but that's a different scope. But yeah, really, really amazing people. Amazing, the best yoga teachers I've ever had the pleasure of chilling with and learning from. And, you know, it wasn't that we did, you know, class every single day together, but just being around them, you know, sharing some personal stuff, them helping me out with my alignment and with other stuff in their philosophy, especially, you know, Waylon, he was so deep into the philosophy, you know, 110%. He knew it all. And, you know, breath work to him was skateboarding and nutrition to me, you know, like, so into breath work, you know, and just like great example. So I learned a lot from them. But then back to being on the other side of Vancouver afterwards, I found this studio that taught Kundalini. I checked it out. I'd never heard of it. And at, I believe it was 3:30 a.m. in the morning, they offered a free class. You know, that was like the time that all the teachers and all the super serious students there, and apparently around the world, that was like the world time or something, like back in where it was started, right? And so I wanted to check that out. And being a cheap skateboarder, you know, I'll admit most of my time I've been trying to work as little as I can to skateboard as much as I can, you know? So I was like, free? Yeah. So I'm in my cutoff shorts, you know, like, bombing down this amazing sick hill in Vancouver, like power slide, and like power sliding up to the yoga studio, walking in with my skateboard.
Who is this guy?
Who is this guy? They're all like in full white garb, wow, with their like their bindi on their turban, and like deadpan, like all of them deadpan, not even acknowledging my presence, really, wow, just like in it, yeah, you know, 100% in it, right? So I'm coming in here like, let's do this, you know, and like, you know, they're all chanting, they know every single verse, you know, they're doing the intense breath of fire, you know, it's a 2.5 hour class, and like,
wow,
just like hardcore, right? And like, I couldn't follow the scripture, I had the book, I was trying, you know, I did some of the chanting. The thing that stood out for me, and I did it as often as I could, like quite often actually, for, it wasn't super long, but it was about like 3 to 5 months about, you know? I was still kind of coming out of my Vancouver cloud. There was still a little bit of Ganja at that time. And I just was really impacted by the practice. You know, it was really, really profound to me. And the interesting thing is, I did it a lot there. I moved away from Vancouver and I pretty much forgot about it. You know, I didn't really do it. I did more of the hatha and the power, yeah, and stuff, and I had a few kind of kundalini movements in there just like throughout my day a little bit, but it, right, wasn't something that I seeked out more kundalini classes or anything like that. And it wasn't until years into the raw that I found it again.
Wow.
So and then it awoke something even more in me at that time.
Cool. Yeah, well, let's just dwell and talk about kundalini a little bit more.
All
because
right.
I have taken a few formal kundalini classes, not,
yep,
but my exposure is pretty surface level right now. It's not something I've like practiced consistently or really learned about. How long is it, like a branded form of yoga, or is it like a more ancient form of yoga? When did it start?
Well, there's definitely some controversy around that, you know, because in some circles and some stuff I've read, you know, they call kundalini the king of all yogas, which I've repeated many times before I learned a little bit more, saying that it is the mother branch, that basically it was the first yoga, and that from there other yogas came forth, you know, as it's more of an energetic form of yoga. It's really focused on the chakras and on raising your kundalini energy, or your balancing and raising the latent energy at the base of your spine. And they said that, you know, from there a lot of the other yogic practices were developed to strengthen the body and prepare it for that spiritual expansion, mm-hmm, right? And then I've heard other people say, who are really, they have much more depth of knowledge in yogic literature, that no, it developed kind of as an offshoot of others. It is old, but not necessarily the first by any means, and this and that. And I'll be honest, to me, it doesn't make much of a difference.
Oh, no.
You know,
I'm just curious.
And I actually can't say I know beyond just what I've heard on both sides. But I do know that it has definitely been out there for a long period of time.
Right.
The person I believe who has popularized it the most is Yogi Bhajan.
Mm-hmm.
I'm probably not even pronouncing his name completely correctly. I have his teacher training manuals, you know, and I've gone through those a few times,
mm-hmm,
and definitely appreciate the knowledge and all the postures and breath work contained there within. For me, what actually happened though, you know, I had taken those really intensive kind of holistic, if you could use that term, kundalini classes, where they really encompassed all of the aspects of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was about 5 years into raw, 4.5 years into raw food. I dated a girl who I was madly in love with, amazing, amazing soul, whom me eating raw all the time was a big issue. You know, it was causing issues with her and her feeling about herself and what she was doing and eating. You know, she was vegetarian, vegan, lots of raw food, but not strictly raw food. And so we decided together to enjoy some cooked food together, you know, so I started doing that. And this all led to like it becoming a big part of the reason we ended up breaking up. She wanted me to eat more cooked food. I wanted to eat less. It was really affecting me after, you know, almost 5 years clean, simple, low fat, raw.
Right.
Like, no, like I didn't eat any hot peppers or garlic or onions for like almost 5 years. It really affected me. And so we ended up breaking up. There's other reasons, but that was one of the main ones. And I went back home and I was just crushed. Like, I literally, this was the first, one of the first times in my life that I was really considering, like, you know, maybe getting married or like, you know, real long life, you know. And I came home just devastated, just wrecked, you know, and I was so depressed. And like,
was there a period of time though where once you started to adopt like the yoga nutritional practices, mm-hmm. that initial depression and feelings huge. Kind of dissipated.
Huge. It wasn't like wow. black and white, where it was like, I never thought of those things. But,
of course. And I mean,
you know, I don't think anyone has that.
No one
but,
has that.
But it was profound. Like literally when I started wow. doing that, it was like a very profound progression to feeling just better and better, and those thoughts slipping away more and more. I still had them, but it got a lot less. You know, raw food, boom. That was it. Seriously, when I went 100% raw, it was like, from occasional depression to like just complete bliss and gratitude. And I kid you not, it was like, I think for me, when I fully went fully raw, it was like heart open. It was like my heart just burst.
Yeah,
open.
I know the feeling.
Yeah,
I really do. It's incredible.
So crazy, and I'd love to talk more about that as well. That was a huge point in my life. But with the yoga, you know, I was at home. I was really depressed. My family was really caring for me, but allowing my space. I was just walled up in my basement, just really sad. I got to a point literally that I didn't feel like I could digest bananas. Like I felt like when I was trying to eat bananas or anything, it just felt like a brick in my stomach, and
yeah,
I didn't want it. My lust for life was gone.
The love crush, just like feeling is terrible.
That was my worst broken heart. It was horrible, yeah. But it was a mutual thing. It wasn't like she did it to me, so I don't want to come across like that, but
all
it
right.
was just like a loss, a huge loss, right?
Yeah. Loss of connection, of intimacy.
Huge, huge. And so I was crushed, and all of a sudden there's just this one night that I remembered Kundalini. And literally, it hadn't really been present in me for a long time. I did yoga with her a lot even, but it was always like hatha and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And so I just remembered Kundalini, and I remember just like sitting down for about 3 hours, going through many of the postures. Most of the ones I did were the first three chakras, which a lot of that has to do with digestion and all those kind of organs too.
Right.
So I was doing like full on in the present moment, just committing myself 100 to it, the breath work hardcore. Next day, my digestion, perfect. Like just, it was like an internal spark. My fire got lit back up, and I just felt like on top of things. And
wow.
It was actually at that point that all of a sudden I said, okay, you know, I'm going to start the raw advantage. I'm going to get back to like complete simplicity, to what I'm all about, what I love. That was another big kind of point of contention in the relationship too. I was like, I know what I want to do. I want to be teaching raw food,
right.
living it 100%. And of course that kind of conflicts with, well, I want you to eat more cooked food and like get a regular job.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I was like, if I gave up all of that, you know, I'm going to go full bore into this 110%.
Right.
And I literally within about 3 months, I got a job as a construction worker. I made enough money to buy a computer. Got a friend to make the first page of my website, went full bore, and ever since then, it's been almost 7 years now, full time with the Raw Advantage. That's a little bit of a boom, right?
Boom, yeah.
A little bit of a boom.
Wow. So, like, at the start of, like, I guess starting your own business, what was, like, your vision and message and mission behind the company? Was it, like, very based on health and nutrition and raw foods? Was there a component of kind of vegan animal rights stuff, or what was it really all about?
Well, you know, and rewinding a little bit, I got into a school called CSNN, Canadian School of Natural Nutrition, which offered a holistic nutrition degree. I'm a registered holistic nutritionist.
Okay.
And so ever since then, and even before, kind of like I was talking, my view had been kind of holism and holistics and stuff like that. So Raw Advantage to me is, you know, the raw advantage of holistic and raw food living, you know, of clean living, of natural living. So the focus has always been on the raw food diet, or high vibrancy raw foods, simple foods, low fat. Ever since the beginning, I've been introduced to raw foods since the severe application, or the full-on application, and just by, I guess, predilection and just habit, or just what was available. It's always kind of been high carb, low fat, even since high raw. But it's always been kind of like raw food, athletics, you know, sleep, clean air, all those things, you know. But I'd say that skateboarding, yoga, raw food have been number one.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, the offshoot was, you know, like really expanding the reasons why you're a raw foodist, or
right.
why you're a vegan. And like, wow, do you know how much of an impact it makes on the environment? Holy cow, do you know how much of an impact it makes on the lives of countless other
right,
living
so
beings.
So going beyond just like the health of the personal immune system and skin and joints.
For
and
sure.
Like
physical,
that.
Mental, emotional, spiritual health has always been a huge aspect. And, you know, I can even say that by the point that I really launched the Raw Advantage, the deeper underlying reason why I wanted to do this, why I want to spread this, is because I just think it makes the most profound impact on your ability to open up, to deeply go within and to see, you know, any darkness in there, which is just an aspect, other aspect of light, of course, but to have more introspection, you know, to have more knowledge, more understanding of your choice and what suits you, what feels better in your impact on other living beings. And I see it as not necessarily as like the spiritual evolution, but as a pathway that can open you up to deeper aspects of spiritual inquiry and growth, you know, and not to say I think that you are automatically more spiritual as a raw Buddhist, but I do think it opens a propensity.
There's a huge trend. Like, there's no way it's a coincidence that I started practicing yoga every single day consistently about a month after I went from eating a vegetarian junk food diet to a vegan diet. And, like, I've seen it so many times. Once you are eating foods that are nourishing your body so that it doesn't have to put as much energy into working on the physical stuff, you have this energy in your heart and mind and even like intellectually that allows you to devote a lot more of your practice and time to things that go into the next level, go into that next level.
100%. I mean, just as, you know, breath work brings in prana, you know, like, you know, just as sun gazing brings in prana, you know, the way I look at it is fruit is the physical manifestation of God's love. You know, to me, it's like, it's all the pranas coming together. You know, it's like, it's of course, air and sun and water and earth, like all those things just imbued into one, created for our nourishment, for our growth, for our enjoyment, you know? So like, I see it as God's love. And that was one of the things to me that melted my depression was just like, how can I be depressed? How can I be filled with hate when I just continually refill myself with God's love,
you know? And like coming from a place where you were filling yourself with hate and hate, violence, like
exactly
between me and you, like who have lived the life, it's just so obvious.
It is really obvious.
And chronic depression and anxiety is like plaguing the world right now. Rates of that are obviously like through the roof. We live in a place like, you know, people as young as, you know, growing up in high school, I had tons of friends who were on intense medications, going to therapy, just because this lack of drive and this like lack of life force energy wasn't present in these people. And I know that food is the just cornerstone to affecting this problem, but people find it easier and obviously make a lot more money to just take a pill and put a band-aid over the symptom instead of making a massive lifestyle change, which is really unfortunate and unfair that it's not being practiced and advocated at that high level of medicine. And,
It all comes down to business and perspective and preference, you know, and something I've really come to notice and believe, you know, I came into this early before I kind of fully went vegan, is that I really felt that, you know what, the vast majority of people out there really are living to eat, to the extent that if they didn't have their favorite food, if they didn't have their favorite dense food, which is a huge coping mechanism, which is used to slow them down, is used to give them comfort, is used to give them love. You know, it's the only thing that doesn't talk back, maybe, you know, besides maybe their dog or their stuffed animal. But if they didn't have that thing, they may not feel like they're able to cope to live. Literally, they feel like without that security blanket, without that instant gratification, that life might not be worth living. And I can relate because I remember in my, you know, mid to late teens that I felt like if I couldn't skateboard, like what are other people even doing? Like literally, I was like, if I didn't have skateboarding, I wouldn't want to live. Like that was my mindset for a lot of years, you know, and I've went through some battles. I talked about fracturing my back and I had times where I thought I was going to lose my ability to skateboard and enjoy it without pain, you know, and it brought me to a point where I was like, I came back into those thoughts sometimes too, just like, man, who am I without this? Like, is this worth it? Like, oh my God, what if I was paralyzed?
You those almost people are... you were using it. I would say skateboarding is a lot healthier than eating junk food, obviously.
Oh, yes.
But that was, you know, that was your form of comfort that you could dabble into and experience every single day that got you to be distracted from some of the other stuff that you maybe didn't want to dig deep into.
For sure. And, it, you know, it was a point of identity as well as, you know, a point of self-esteem. Because if I was doing good and people held me in high esteem, I thought higher of myself, you know. So it was an egoic activity, still is to some degree, you know. And I don't look at it as a bad thing, but I'm a lot more conscious of all these things, you know. And I don't think there's anything that you can completely take on that isn't separated from that to some degree.
Yeah.
But you know, the more things become a lifestyle, the more it's going to impact you on all levels, like skateboarding, raw food. Those are two lifestyle things, right? Where it's like it really permeates into every aspect of your life. And if it gets torn away from you, it can leave you feeling bare, you know?
So something I'm fascinated in, just being at this festival and like being in the community, is that, you know, most people on the mainstream would think that like high carb, low fat, raw fruit-based veganism is like the most narrow pinpoint diet that you can get to, right? And it's just one prescription and everybody in that community eats the same. And even at a festival like this, you see how within those ramifications, how diverse people's diets are, which is incredible. Like, think of all the adjectives I just said. Yeah. Like vegan, raw food, low fat, high carb, organic. Like, but it's still, there's so much more room to explore. So I'm curious, how has your diet changed? Let's say once you started to eat almost strictly raw food. So like at that beginning point when you were like, okay, I found the answer, this is what I'm going to do. Yeah. How has the diet, I mean like just the actual foods that make up the bulk of your day, how has that changed over the last 15 years of this exploration?
Okay, well, that's great. I'll quickly note that really, you know, I'd researched raw food. I'd read some David Wolf books. I had an understanding, more raw. Raw food's poison was one of the things, right? But I didn't get how to do it. I went to a vegan health festival, the first vegan festival I ever went to, about 11 and a bit years ago now. And Doug Graham's one of the speakers, and he was on fire, glowing on stage, just shone with more, you know, simplistic kind of viewpoint of how this works and why to do it. And I just went raw vegan overnight. And so that was the beginning stage of 100% raw food. And I was just seriously pretty much mono or sequential eating, whole foods. I don't really remember, honestly, any recipes besides like a salad or something like that.
Right. So it was really simple. Eating nature's bounty as it is. Yes. You were eating fast food.
Yeah, I was eating fast food. You know, sometimes some smoothies, but it was very simplistic, 100% hygienic, food combining to the T if I was mixing things. Fast forward about 6-7 months, I was getting very thin. I was really athletic. I felt like I was just on rocket fuel, going nonstop all the time. So ecstatic, so happy, just like, you know, wanting to be like a raw food evangelist, you know, share it with everyone. Everyone needed to know.
Yeah.
And, you know, completely gave up anything that was, you know, negative. Like any, there's no ganja, no drinking, anything. 100% done that stuff. And, you know, about 8 months in, all of a sudden I realized that I was getting thinner and thinner, you know, I was getting really thin, and then my joints started hurting and stuff like that. And those first bunch of months too, I was eating almost no fat whatsoever. I just wasn't even thinking about it. Like some, it wasn't like I was avoiding it, but it wasn't a major part of my diet at all.
Were you like quote unquote trying to pack it in, or were you like just kind of eating casually to comfort? Because I feel like a lot of people now, there's so much more information out that people can bypass some of those initial struggles of under eating and stuff like that. But I'm guessing, you know, did you do this before? Are we talking pre-YouTube here?
Oh yeah, for sure. This was 11 years ago.
Right. So yeah, like, so there's the amount of resources to learn about this stuff was just so small.
I met Doug Graham and one of the raw foodists 11 years ago at the festival. Actually, two other raw foodists, and then amazingly, like within a few days after this girl hit on me when I was working at Capers and left a note like, hey, like you seem interesting, it'd be cool to talk. I called her, I was eating some oranges outside, it was after my shift. I'm like, hey, what are you doing? She's like, oh, I'm just chilling out eating some fruit. I'm like, oh, me too. I'm like, what are you eating? She's like, oh, I'm just like eating a bunch of oranges and salad. I'm like, I'm eating like 5 or 6 oranges. That sounds crazy, hey? And she's like, no, not really. I'm like, oh, like, do you eat a lot of fruit too? And she's like, yeah, I just kind of went raw foodist like last week. And we both went raw the exact same time. And she's beautiful, beautiful, amazing girl. Actually, I haven't had much contact with her since then.
Uh-huh.
But
I was thinking this was maybe Ashley and I was going to be so excited.
No, this is 11 years ago. This is right in the beginning. So Ashley's amazing. I love you, Ashley. This is a long time ago, and one of my fondest memories, just funny, is introducing her to plantains, because I'd already been a big fruity and stuff, and she wasn't as much into fruit until right when she went raw. She went for health reasons, right? Yeah. And I remember like eating black, rotten-looking plantains on a Vancouver City sidewalk, and everyone walking by looking at us like we're trash. You know, I was like just eating these rotten bananas, just laughing, loving it. That was just so fun. But yeah, really, I lost my train of thought.
I think my question was like, how's the diet been changing? And you were finding some path to get there.
Yeah, I often do this. So Really, yeah, those first 6 months, it was really simple, super simple, and a lot of juicy foods, not a lot of really dense stuff. It wasn't as many smoothies, so I wasn't, like, making banana smoothies. I hadn't even eaten dates, I don't think, at all.
Okay, well, so you were getting the really low-calorie, high-water content stuff.
Yeah, really simple. I was also incredibly active, like, you know, biking, like, 2 to 4 hours a day and skateboarding 2 hours a day.
You were just getting very underweight.
Yeah. And all of a sudden I was like, okay, I need to figure this out. Vegasaurus was the only really thing that I had. You know, it was like a scouring Doug's Vegasaurus board and going back like years looking at any answer to any question. And I started realizing I need more dense food. So I started eating more bananas, more stuff like that, a little bit more fat, but it wasn't really a focus. It was more dense, high carbohydrate fruit. Mm-hmm. And immediately I just started feeling better and better. That was pretty much the mainstay of my diet for about 5 years, just beyond 3 major tumbles off the raw wagon, which were really far off the raw wagon. We can get into if you want, but yeah, it was like 5 years of just super simplistic, mostly mono-sequential or really well food combined. When I started my website, I pretty much immediately made a book called 101 Frickin' Rawsome Recipes, which originally was called Simply Delicious Raw Recipes. And then I talked to Doug, he's like, do you know what that was like the title of my main series in the book I was coming out with and stuff? I'm like, I'll change it. I released it as that for a year, and I changed it to 101 Frickin' Rawsome Recipes, which are actually like better. I threw it out to my family.
That's more Chris Kendall. It's way more authentic.
Yeah, I love it, man. I love it. It was just like an off thought. Like, what do you think of this? And my whole family's like, that's it. So, and that's pretty much like the representation of what I did eat the first 5 years. What I would recommend most people eat as the mainstay, 97% of their diet. Really simple. But at that point...
Can you list some of the specific foods? Because you were living in Canada as well at the time, right? So, like, you know, you're not in a tropical Hawaiian place. You were like a lot of people who don't live in a climate that maybe caters exactly to like a wild forage raw food diet. So are we just talking the good stuff that shows up in the grocery store?
Just the grocery store.
Bananas, dates, papayas, berries, oranges.
And I'd still say 90% of my diet is 95%+ of my diet is of the foods that you can find almost every grocery store anywhere.
Accessible.
Super practical. There's no exotic ingredients in there beyond like mangoes, you know, really, or mangoes, pineapple, which we can find everywhere, right? So that was the mainstay for sure. But as soon as I put out that book, I was like, I've always been into chefing. I didn't even really say that, you know, before I wanted to go into nutrition, my real focus was chefing vegetarian chefing and vegan chefing, but I didn't find a school that was really possible for me to go to.
Right, yeah, I actually do want to get into your sort of travels recently also different raw food events, and you've been traveling all over the world, like leading, you know, chefing for tons of raw foodies to come together. And I want to hear about that experience and like stress in the kitchen and like all that whole life, because it looks pretty crazy in there. I mean,
it's crazy in here.
The amount of abundance of food that you have to make on this lifestyle as a chef is like 10 times any regular cook out there.
It's all from scratch, every single little bit, for sure. Do you want me to continue on that tangent, or should I go back to...
You pretty much answered that the diet hasn't evolved.
Well, it actually kind of has, because...
Okay, let's talk about that.
Really briefly then, after I put out that Frickin' Rawsome Recipes book, I was like, this is great, but a lot of people aren't really going to be pulled by this that aren't already into raw foods. So I was like, I want to get a little bit more creative and showcase recipes that are more cravings busters, that are more like emulating old cooked foods, all my old favorites. So I started really exploring and using my creativity in the kitchen to create a lot more low-fat raw gourmet recipes, because I didn't see that middle ground. It was either like hygienic, low-fat raw, or high-fat gourmet. So I was like, I want to merge those two worlds. And
with dressings and sauces.
And yeah, and all that stuff. And I mean, there is definitely a lot more now, but at that point, I didn't see any of that out there, literally. And I said, you know, in 2 months, I'm coming out with this Cravings Busters book. And then in 2 months, I said, in 2 more months, in 2 more months, I said, 2 more months. It's now been 5 and a bit years. I still haven't put it out. I've leaked a lot of recipes. I have over 160 that, instead of being one monster book, is going to be 4. Wow. And, I can say, you know, I had that 3 quarters done, and then my computer crashed. It completely erased everything, so I had to start again. And that's a big part of the reason why it got put on hold, because I was like...
But you're a yogi, so you honor your karmic fate of a past life and say, I have no control of this.
Yeah, I have no control. This is what is. I'm going to move forward. Wow. So the new outline's up. The first book's basically done. I just got to get the pictures and fine-tune it, and that'll be out in the next while. But anyways, yeah, so since then... most of the time I eat simple, similar to how I have, but then I also do have a ton of like, you know, raw food recipes like East Indian or Thai or Mediterranean, whatever. And I utilize those a lot more than could be to my absolute benefit probably. Because I do look at those as more as like occasional recipes that are better for like feast days or for celebrations.
Right.
But they could also even be like raw food, emotional eating recipes because they're a little more dense, but they still digest really good and they give you that nostalgic kind of release and comfort, right? So that's kind of how my diet has progressed now, where I maintain a simple low-fat raw food diet the vast majority of the time, but I allow a little bit more low-fat raw gourmet, and then the advent of raw restaurants, which happened way after I got into it, as far as I saw from where I was, I eat those when I'm in the cities that I have them.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, talk a little bit about your travels in the past few years, and also what you've, you know, we're at Woodstock Fruit Festival. It's freaking awesome. This is my only raw food festival experience, and I don't want you to pick favorites, but sort of showcase some of the other raw food festivals that really stand out to you other than just Woodstock that you've been a part of.
Awesome. Well, I do want to say that Woodstock has been so integral in my path. You know, it's like I was very, very blessed right from the get-go, like I said, to be invited on as a yoga teacher, a speaker, and a chef. And before that, I had limited experience in that besides just like small scale, you know. So it really impacted me in such a way and has given me confidence and even more drive to further those things, because I never was a super social like person in the sense that like I didn't want to be on stage. I never wanted to be on stage. In fact, in school, like if the teacher said my name and told me to stand up, I'd turn beet red and want to cry. You know, like it was just one of my biggest fears ever. But doing it, it led me to know that, wow, this is worthwhile. I can share. I can impact. I can grow as a human being and burst past some of my comfort levels, right? So that's been huge. I love Woodstock. One of the things I love about it so much is that it brings so many of the people who've been living the lifestyle for a long time, whether you want to call them pioneers, experts, or just enthusiasts, you know, like people who are, live and breathe it and want it to spread more than anything else in their life. And it brings so many people from different point of view aspects and disciplines outside of just raw food that anyone who comes here can learn. Anyone who comes here can connect with somebody and really vibe, and you can just learn such a wide breadth of knowledge. So that's one thing I just love about Woodstock. And I've been to the Denmark Raw Food Festival, or the Denmark Fresh Food Festival. I absolutely, absolutely love it out there as well. I was there for the second year this year as the head chef, a yoga teacher, food demo. They have a half pipe on stage.
Oh,
so
my gosh.
I teach a skateboarding class.
Nice, that's awesome.
Yoga, of course, you know, and just a lot of fun. They have dancing out there. They have a lot of different people living the lifestyle and just an amazing crew. The people out there in that area of the world are just amazing and a blessing to be around. I absolutely love it out there. You know, the food quality is amazing. You know, they get the best mangoes in the world, fresh durian.
I wouldn't have expected that.
Yeah, it's amazing. The best mangoes I've ever had in my life I've had out in Denmark.
Wow. Where were the mangoes from?
They're actually from Pakistan. They're Pakistani honey mangoes. And they're expensive, but amazing. And, you know, I've picked mangoes off the tree in Costa Rica, Mexico, Hawaii, you know, and had the best. They're still by far my favorite.
Wow.
So good. Yeah, I absolutely love it out there. Feel blessed to be a part of that. I've also been a part of the Slovenia Festival. I'm not sure if that might be rest in peace or not. This year it got canceled. There wasn't quite enough people going, but I was there last year and it was amazing. Amazing people, amazing scenery. The feel of it was good. The food quality was great. I did the same things. I was actually, I wasn't chefing there. I was a speaker and yoga teacher. I also did the UK Fruit Festival, not this year, the year before, which was really darn amazing. Ronnie, he puts it together really good. Amazing food. There I did more yoga and speaking, food demos. And then last, this year also, I did a festival in Sweden. And that was really, really cool because that festival was actually, it was originally the first 4 years a high-fat gourmet raw food festival, and this was the first year that anyone on low-fat came into it.
Nice.
So it wasn't specifically a low-fat raw vegan festival. There was teachers on both sides.
Right. You got to offer your philosophy and
yeah.
and you know, showcase food and stuff like that.
Exactly. And nice. The chefs actually were Peter Cech and his wife, and you know, and they're low fat raw vegans. They have been for like 15 plus years. So they made it a little simpler, a little lower fat, but still made it gourmet because they know how to turn it out however, yeah, right?
And sure,
that was really amazing. Been to the Pure Living Expo the last couple of years, which is again kind of a mixture of all philosophies, and that's really interesting there. You have people on stage saying that white sugar is better than fruit. You have people on stage saying that smoothies are poison.
Is this?
At the Pure Living Expo.
Wow.
It's amazing, and I love it there, you know, because it's more about connection, spirituality, raw living foods.
Wow.
And not everyone, of course, has that mindset, but there are people literally on stage saying, like, you know, enzyme powders and sprouts are the ultimate diet. And if fruit is like almost poison, seriously, I was blown away.
Wow.
But the spirit there, you know, and the aspect of spirituality there and connection is huge. And I always love going back there and also representing this lifestyle and being a healthy example so people can see that's what it looks like to eat poison for 11 years straight, you know?
Totally. I want to ask you a question, I guess, kind of in a different light to the food and nutrition specifically. This may be tough to answer. I'm not sure. Maybe you have an opinion on it. But for someone who is like an animal rights activist, for me, the reason that I'm like, you know, make this podcast and put out my YouTube and just all my content and the bigger stuff that I'm planning on after I finish school revolves around the animal rights movement and environmental movement first and foremost. That's what I'm here to do as an activist. And I'm definitely not saying that that's everybody's place. I think there's a lot of people whose passion are in health and nutrition and can offer a just as legitimate, amazing service to the world by catering the conversation through what is the optimal healthy diet. Because the reality is, humans are animals, humans are extremely sick and need help. So
100%.
I appreciate that. But something that I found, you know, I practiced a 100% fully raw diet from last Woodstock until about 3 months ago, for about 9 months. Because I'm a health and nutrition geek, and this lifestyle makes me feel the best, and I love it, and I'm happy, and I'm a college student, and I live in Colorado, and I was able to do it the whole year throughout the winter with ease, buying cheap boxes of bananas and fruit, and it actually worked. I was surprised at how seamless it was. But something I did notice, I had this moment where I wanted to evaluate my role in the movement.
Yep.
And while health and nutrition was very important to me personally, I really found myself not too obsessed or interested in the level of health and nutrition of my peers versus getting them to go to eat veggie burgers from eating meat-based burgers.
Yeah.
That was my interest because animal rights is what got me into this conversation.
For sure.
That's what I want to promote. So do you see any way that the raw food community or like advocating for a strict 100% raw diet, you know, in a lot of the books that we've read, they'd sometimes pair meat, dairy, and rice in one sentence.
Yeah.
And like,
yeah,
I see that as potentially dangerous for the animal rights movement in terms of lowering the accessibility and practicality to the mainstream who's out there eating Wendy's and McDonald's every day.
For sure.
How have you sort of navigated that and your opinions on that?
Well, like the whole cooked food is poison. You know, if you're not 100% raw, you might as well just go lay down.
So I guess not advocating for a raw diet because that's cool, but saying that eating cooked food specifically is going against like a healthy lifestyle.
Well, I can say when I first 100% like really first got into it, I was like 100% strict raw vegan, where it was like the thought of having a bite of cooked food, I was like, I would rather fast for 2 months. Like,
you were dogmatic.
I was dogmatic. I was a preacher, you know, and it wasn't like horribly outspoken, but my message did soften a lot as I kind of came to mature in it, maybe, but that might be a lack of a better term. You know, having my background in holistic nutrition, when I'm consulting people, I give all options. And what I like to say is I like to point towards the moon. You know, I like to, as Bruce Lee said that often, right? But I like to point towards what I perceive as being the best. Specifically, too, if I'm talking to someone who has candida or who has like chronic fatigue or something like that, I'll be like, listen, you know, if I was in your shoes and I wanted the best way to do it possible, I'd say this is number one. Then check your stress levels, because if doing this creates huge stress levels, back off of that.
Socially and emotionally.
Exactly. And going into all those things, because there's ways that you can reduce stress socially, emotionally, and stuff like that. So learn new coping mechanisms, try on new perspectives, all these things, right? But at the end of the day, if you want to still eat cooked foods, you're going to end up eating cooked foods again. And I'm a huge believer that we're experiential beings, that we're here to experience everything. And if we deny ourselves something we truly want to experience, we're just going to be creating stress, we're going to create separation, and we're going to yo-yo.
I love that you say that, because another kind of reoccurring theme that I like to talk about this on this podcast is like health beyond the plate. That
yes,
there's other
huge.
Things that, I mean, food is really the, I think, the initial foundation that starts it all in order to get into the stuff that really brings the true health, which is the top tiers, whether that's spirituality, stress reduction, love, relationships.
All of it is so important. It's just as important as food, you know? And for me, when I'm consulting people, when I'm talking to people, number one, acceptance of everyone on their path is my absolute number one, because we're not all at the same place at the same time. Zero judgments. You know, if there is a judgment, it flashes through and leaves pretty damn quick. Because I used to be judgmental about things.
We're all judgmental. When we look at someone, we're analyzing them. But the practice is to acknowledge that judgment, say, that's my doing, and try to put it aside.
Let it go. To just let it go. So that's number one for me. And then number two is trying to get into the area of where can they love themselves the most? Where can they honor themselves the most? You know, and understanding, yeah, sure, maybe this works the best on a purely physical level, but what are my needs? What are my wants?
Right.
What route do I want to go? Is it direct or is it slow? And with my background in holistic healing and nutrition, you know, I offer, you know, cooked food recipes and understanding of what foods in the cooked food realm are going to work the best.
Right.
And if you go all the way down to the other side and eat fast food, how can you do that in the most healthful way where you're going to gain the most from your experience?
Because
I do also say, like, if you're going to go for it, love it, be it 100%, make it a meditation, experience it, because it's that unwillingness to accept it, that lack of love in doing it, and that unconscious behavior that I find actually entraps us into those behaviors and makes us, you know, like reject, and then do them again when we're in that negative head spin, right? And through the self-acceptance, love, and full-on connected, conscious, you know, experiential moment that you can have doing those things, all of a sudden you can learn to let go of them, you know. So my focus is on individual kind of coaching, you know, really getting into the root of it, and emotional understanding of the ramifications of food and growing emotionally.
I really appreciate that answer, and that sounds just so authentic to like what your message is. You're such like a bright, energetic, always seemingly like helpful person, whether it's on your YouTube videos or like meeting you at Woodstock. And I like that you agree that you inspire people to look towards the stars of here's where we should all get to if we want to experience that mental and physical.
Or do you want to get there? Really? Because some people don't. Some people want to be at the bottom of the barrel, and that's fine. I think some people are here in this life to experience the darker sides and experience those lower vibrations so that maybe in the next they want to choose.
You're just offering, you're seeing people exactly where they're at, catering your philosophy to people's goals, or catering your help, your service to people's goals, and saying if you are someone who is that next level seeker of optimum love, nutrition, health, vitality, I have some information and help to offer.
100%. You know, because I think it all starts with self-love, self-understanding, acceptance, and knowledge, you know. And to me, it's like, if I can get somebody to actually really look into what do I want, not what do I think I should have, what I think I should do, what this person says is best for me, but who am I? What do I really want? And come into more acceptance of that. And from there, learn experientially through their choices that are genuine where that goes. It's always ending. It's always going up.
Right.
I mean, that's the path of evolution. That's the path of spiritual expansion is understanding, self-knowledge, growth, experience, and from that choice.
Right.
And I believe that's why we're here, for the highest choice, to come to wanting it, not to be feeling we should or be tortured or forced into it, right?
All right. Well, I know you have to go teach a Kundalini yoga class pretty soon. Got a couple minutes.
Yeah, we got about 20. Yeah.
All right, but I do want to, while you're here, talk about relationships as a raw foodie and health person. That's something that I've had successes and, I guess you could call failures or not successful experiences in. When it comes to dating and finding a life partner, mm-hmm. when you are on what would be considered an extreme diet lifestyle path to the mainstream,
yeah.
sometimes your pool of love, if you're a single person, gets very narrow compared to the average person.
Yeah.
And you have, it seems like you've hit the dynamite. I mean, oh, you have a beautiful, incredible, activist raw food partner
who NaturallyAshley.com
seems very in alignment with, you know, your mission. And that's what's so great about a festival like this for someone who's interested in finding a partner like that, to mm-hmm. surround yourself with like-minded people. But you've also had the experience, as you gratefully shared in this podcast, of like how relationships may not work out so well if you're into this and it's not in alignment. So what's your sort of advice and recommendations within your experience of your successes and I guess not so much successes of, if you are someone who's like extremely passionate about this, what are the best ways to like, and is it essential and crucial for most people, do you think, to find like a life partner who's in alignment with your values like that?
That's a huge question, and definitely a really, really, really big one. It's definitely going to come down to individuality and stuff like that. But what I can say is that in the beginning, when my flame was but a candlelight, when I was just getting into this, when my the impact that social and relationship kind of things had on me was more severe, you know, like a bit of a breeze could almost put it out.
Right.
It was a lot more important for me to be with somebody who was fully in alignment. I separated myself, actually, not meaning I stayed away from all the time, but I separated myself from the atmosphere and activities that would have been like a storm. So I wasn't going to the bar to look to meet girls, you know?
Of course, yeah. You were in a sensitive time, an intensely sensitive time.
Yes, and I think this is an important thing to bring up is, you know, like when people first get into it, they might need to be in a little bit of an incubator to some degree, you know? And that's not meaning tell your friends you can't be friends with them, but it's like what I found was like, wow, all those people that I love that I'm connected with, why don't we go out to the park and skateboard? Why don't we go out for a run? Let's bring together and come together in things that aren't as socially challenging.
And that we agree on together. Because I think it's another good point that people like us who are into raw foods and high-level nutrition, we're still not one-trick ponies. It's not our entire life. We can still connect with an average person on a multitude of topics.
Exactly. And if we bring that into our life, into everyone else, whether it's a relationship or whether it's like an intimate relationship or whether it's just a social friend relationship, we're going to be spreading our being. We're going to be spreading the message in a lighter way, just mm-hmm. through being comfortable, not feeling like, oh, I'm a raw vegan, so I can't hang out with someone who's not a raw vegan, right. You know, and that way it kind of spreads further. And I can say the same thing with relationship in the beginning. And even now is a preference, absolutely, for sure. I can right off the bat say it's a lot more joyous and a lot more expansive to be in a relationship with somebody that you're really in align with,
because
you can go on trips and vacations for the same reasons. When you're going out, you're not, one person isn't thinking restaurant, while they might be now at the raw food restaurant scene, but not as much. It's like, let's go get some good food. Let's just go sit and eat this juicy stuff together. There's no contra kind of indications there, right? You know, but otherwise, you know, what I've found is after a few years of, you know, being really solid with self and just knowing why I'm doing it and kind of growing an acceptance of what other people are doing on their path, you know, I had some relationships with people that were smokers and meat eaters and drinkers and a lot of, you know, other people who were just a little bit doing that and more like vegetarian, and it was still amazing, but it was more challenging. You know, I don't think it's necessity, you know, especially I know a lot of people who are in a married relationship and then one of them goes raw, right?
Right, yeah.
It's just a huge...
Or even vegan. I know friends that have had that happen as well.
Yeah, and I mean, to me, as soon as you start talking about bringing a child into this world, that's when it gets the most difficult. But other than that, I think it comes back and gives you a opportunity to experience what it is to be compassion, what it is to be understanding, what it is to be empathy, love, and acceptance, you know, and that can be incredibly challenging, but if you see it as that opportunity, that can be even more of a rewarding relationship, right? Because you can just come into that space where you're like, this is me, this is what I believe, they know it, I'll share it at times, but not like stuff it down their throats, and allow them to be on their path and to make their own choices and love them unconditionally, to be unconditional love. So I think that's really huge. But that said, we all have our choices. We all have our preference. And I mean, at the end of the day, raw girls taste better. So, you know, I think, you know, I prefer to be in a raw food or a vegan relationship, yeah. You know? Yeah. And Ashley is just amazing. You know, it makes things a little bit more light, vibrant and juicy.
I agree. I think it's a nice place to close it down. You got to go teach the gift and power of yoga to people, which is beautiful.
Love it, man. Love it.
So if anyone wants to check out more about what you're all about, so your recipe books, your videos, what are the best places to do that?
Well, everything is at therawadvantage.com, Raw Advantage on YouTube and Instagram, Twitter, all those things, Facebook, I'm everywhere. But
just find the awesome animations of the Banana Commander.
Ooh, baby, I like it raw. Yeah, you know, but, you know, on my website, The Raw Advantage, I have my two main recipe ebooks. By donation, you know, I have the paper copies. I do offer consultation one-on-one diving into your lifestyle by donation. I offer retreats out in Costa Rica, raw food yoga, skateboard retreats and raw food yoga, surf retreats, adventure, waterfalls, connection, wow. Talking about the emotional, social aspects of raw food, you know, lots of t-shirts, lots of fun stuff. And I do briefly want to mention, mm-hmm. I have my budding charity, the TRA Dream, which is a 501c3 recognized charity. Half the proceeds from my 101 Frickin' Rawsome Recipes book go fully into the charity. And the Dream is all about creating holistic healing, permaculture, raw food, yoga, a bit of skateboard, mm-hmm. Healing centers around the world that run primarily off of donation. You know, so donation-based healing centers. So if someone's sick, if they need to heal, if they want to learn the lifestyle, if they want to put their hands in the soil and grow food, if they want to learn some yoga, they can come, and money isn't an object. It's not the delimiting factor and for people coming.
So that's kind of your next big, where you're leading to goal with all of this?
That's what I want to leave behind. You know, I want to leave behind these centers around the world, whether I'm here for the first or for the 10th. You know, I just want to see it happen. And I have an amazing group of people who are doing it together with me. I have Christina Bucaram, who's on mm-hmm. the Board of Governors. I have Curtis Griffin. I have Lori, my team leader, who's helping me
That's
out with all this.
That's so exciting.
So I'm feeling so excited about it too, and it's only going to grow.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. It was awesome getting to know you a little bit more and
you
connecting.
Too,
I really appreciate you in a lot of ways. I love just your energy, just that, you know, you vibe off in the first place, and also that you're very intersectional when it comes to kind of raw vegan presenter leaders in the community, because it's not only about food for you. It goes way beyond, from play on a skateboard mm-hmm. To love, you know, relationships, yoga. And that's what I've found in my journey too, is that food is one of the focus, but it's not the only focus. And it sort of opens up a path to become the best version of yourself in so many different ways. And
Absolutely.
I think you sort of articulate that and present that in a beautiful way. So thanks so much for sharing.
Absolute pleasure, brother. Thank you so much. Stoked to be here.
Plantriotic. Much love.
Love yourself.
And that does it for the episode, guys. Thank you so much for listening all the way through. Gosh, I still have a few of these Woodstock Fruit Festival podcasts, and it just brings me back to probably my favorite week-long event of the entire year that I look forward to. I will definitely be going this next year, 2016, to the Woodstock Fruit Festival. It's unbelievable. It's a transformative, life-changing experience, and you get to meet amazing people like Chris Kendall. So thank you so much for listening again and for just supporting the show. Like, you guys are amazing. As I get more reviews and ratings and listens, and I know you're all watching my YouTube videos, it just means a lot that I have this interconnected community that gets to absorb my passion and information in so many ways. So thank you so much. If you do want to support what I'm doing, give me some love. Make sure to spread the word about the podcast, about the YouTube channel, about the Instagram account, everything Plantriotic. And also, if you really want to help out, you can leave a review on the iTunes page. Just takes anywhere from 5 to, you know, 20, 30 minutes if you want to write a big paragraph. But really, you can just say, yo, this is what I think about the podcast. It's helped me, however you feel about it. And that does a lot to boost up the ratings of the show so that more people
who are interested in looking for a health and fitness, spirituality related podcast will find out about this one. So if you support the show and you want other people to hear about it, just leave a review on the iTunes page. It's a big help. Thank you. And you can also follow me on everything from Instagram, Twitter, Tumblr, Snapchat, YouTube. Everything is at Plantriotic for your convenience. And just because the podcast is only once a week, I'm posting on all those other platforms, you know, YouTube 3 times a week, Instagram and Snapchat every single day. So I'm putting out recipes, pictures, inspiration. Go send me some love over there. All right, for the assignment for this week, you know, Chris is a raw food expert. He is a chef. He's a holistic nutritionist. He has a lot to offer on the food side of things, the technical aspect of eating healthy. But what I really got from this conversation the most out of anything is this idea of doing a survey of your life wherever you are and evaluating your level of happiness and if you need to do something to change that. Because he was, I think there's so many people in our culture, especially young people that I go to school with, who are in this rut of depression. I mean, I have days every once in a while where I'm down or I'm blue, but I think because I am conscious about how to treat my body properly, from the food I eat to the sleep I get, the relationships I have, and exercise, I maintain a very happy person. And I remember the days when I would be blue for a longer period of time before I implemented this kind of these holistic practices into my life. So the assignment of the week is to, and this is maybe really hard for a lot of people, is to do a big survey sort of your life experience and realize if there's certain habits that you have in your life that probably aren't facilitating a happy, peaceful, sustainable way to live. That can be anything from eating unhealthy foods or personal habits you have, ways that you get ticked off when you're driving to work or school. There's so many little things in our life that if we made minor changes can have a really big impact. For Chris, that was changing his relationship to food and eating a raw food diet. For some people, you probably don't have to go all the way to eat a raw food diet in order to become the happiest person. But for some other, maybe more extreme people, that's a really good kind of sure-proof way to increase your level of happiness and just health in your life. So if you want to participate in this challenge, this assignment, and you want to tell me about it, you should, you know, post on the Facebook page, Plantriotic Facebook page, or leave me an Instagram comment. Let me know how you like these assignments. Let me know the ones that maybe you don't like, how you want me to inspire you guys, because at the end of the day, all my content from YouTube to the podcast to Instagram, it's for all of you guys to become better, more happy, loving people. So thank you guys so much for all the support. I truly love you guys, and I'll see you next week on the Plantriotic Podcast.